Welcome to the Lookout Landing podcast. I am Kate Prusser, managing editor of Lookout Landing. And I am joined today by one of our writers making his debut on the podcast. It's Eric Sanford. Eric, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I am good as well. I know you're excited to be here.
Yeah, for sure.
And extra exciting, we took a week off, had some things to do. I had to go to Tacoma to see an Andrew Moore start, which actually relates to our guest today, who is teammates with Andrew Moore on the 2016 Jackson Generals, and it's Ian Miller. Ian, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How's everybody doing?
Excellent.
Good.
Ian is currently in Arkansas?
Yes. No. I'm in Texas, Midland, Texas.
Where am I?
Midland, Texas. Yeah, I mean, do you have those moments where you have to be like, you wake up in the hotel or whatever, and you're like, where am I again?
Definitely, and it's a big thing with the days of the week. I never know what day of the week it is.
Oh, yeah. I bet, because even just in writing about baseball, sometimes they kind of blur together, and especially this week with the holiday, I'm like, Wednesday, Thursday.
For sure. Yeah, every day's the same. Every day's the same.
But that's good, too, because the routine, right, it sort of...
Yeah, yeah. It's the only thing that's different is, you know, if we're playing a day game or something. And, you know, but basically everything's the same. Everything's always the same. It's easy to get into a routine. And, I mean, that's the great part.
Well, let's recap briefly sort of what's going on in Mariners land. The Mariners are currently on a four-game winning streak against the formerly first-place Rockies. Yeah, they have knocked them out of first place, which caused some very salty Rockies behavior, fan behavior on the Twitter. They were not happy about that. And why would they be? Because Paxton is back, and he was dominant last night.
Oh, man. It was so much fun watching him pitch again after, you know, struggling through the last month or so of a lot of guys making their first big league starts and, you know, getting through it, but often getting just lit up, which is just makes for not fun baseball watching. But to watch James Paxton come back and just, like, nothing ever happens and pitch like an ace again, just from the get-go, he was just so dialed in.
Yeah, I thought for sure he would need, like, a little bit of an on-ramping. I know he did a rehab stint with you guys, right, in Arkansas.
Yes.
And actually kind of got hit around a little there. They gave up a home run. What was that like, having him in the clubhouse? And did you get to spend any time with him?
Yeah.
Did he get you guys dinner? Because I think that's important.
He did. He got us barbecue, and it was fantastic. Like, big old thing of ribs for everybody. And having him around in the clubhouse was awesome. I mean, he's a... You know, when he gets into game mode, I guess, just from what I've seen, he's a great dude, but he gets into, like, a stone-cold mode, and you can tell when he gets locked in. And then, you know, I was actually on the bench because, you know, dealing with a little hamstring thing. But so I saw him, you know, after the innings and between the innings. And, I mean, he just stays locked in, and it's fun to watch.
That's great to hear that even in a rehab start, even, you know, playing against guys who are – not his normal competition, that he's able to just keep that intensity dialed up. Because that makes sense to me then why he came out last night. Because I was like, oh, maybe he'll take it easy on the velocity. He'll come out 94, 95. Nope, 97, 98, 99. Just
he was throwing hard here, too. And, I mean, he knew that they were probably going to be swinging early and often, you know what I mean? Just because he throws a million miles an hour from the left side. But... you know, it was fun to watch. It was fun to see him compete, and I think everybody took a little something out of it.
That's awesome. Well, in Paxton's stead, we have had, he's still with the team, and has been pitching well. I can't see him getting sent down anytime soon. Sam Gaviglio, who was also a teammate of yours on that 2016 Jackson team. And actually, a few of those guys you have seen make it to the majors. Edwin Diaz, Dan Altavilla, Heredia, Gaviglio, Emilio Pagan, who I know you're close with.
Yes.
So what's it been like seeing those guys make it to the bigs?
It's unbelievable. You know, playing with all of those guys, you see how they approach the game, what they do to get ready. what they do on the field, what type of competitors they are, and they all kind of share the same trait. Especially even seeing Paxton, it's like, you know, they're regular dudes in the clubhouse, they're regular dudes off the field, but once they step, when it's their time to pitch, they lock it in. They kind of turn insane almost. They're just crazy. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, they'll kill you. They're just warriors on the mound. It's just fun to watch. They just flip a switch and they stay in there until they get taken out.
Well, I think we especially see that with Emilio Pagan this year, who has had some good years in the minors. Came up to Tacoma, struggled a little, went to the AFL, the Arizona Fall League, and then went to the WBC. And I swear, ever since he's come back from the WBC, he's been murderous in AAA. I think he was running like a 12K9. And I know that you are friendly with him. So do you think that experience in the WBC kind of helped him learn how to flip that switch? Or what's the difference you see in him?
You know what? I don't think maybe it helped him flip that switch, because he was pitching like his hair was on fire in Pulaski my first year in rookie ball. I think maybe it just showed him that he could do that, the same thing that he did in Pulaski on a stage in front of 40,000 people, and still come out on the winning side of it. I don't know. It's fun to see him pitch. It's fun to see him compete. I take bits and pieces from him and try to put it into my game, in terms of, you know, the confidence that he's got in his ability and just his mindset and attitude. And, you know, I think it just reaffirmed what he's been doing since, you know, he got drafted, that he can do it on any stage.
Which is especially satisfying to see, because I think he was regarded as kind of a reach pick. People say, who is this guy? Like, he comes out of this small school in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about him. And, you know, draft guys do not like when you make them look uninformed. Mm-hmm. Right? Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah, he, you know, senior signed. I don't think he signed for a bunch of money. I think he actually used whatever money he got to buy a ring for his girlfriend at the time. And he used it all as fuel to the fire. And, you know, he's kind of helped me do the same thing, kind of talking to me about going into this year, just kind of being the underdog. That's, if you don't play with a chip on your shoulder, then you just don't play very well. And he's always been able to do it, and he's been able to put it together this year. And I'd be lying if I said he didn't kind of help me put bits and pieces of it together this year as well.
I think the phrase that we've talked about a little is playing like a villain, which yes. is an awesome mindset. Can you expand on that a little? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so I just, I don't know how to be, you know, nice about it. It's just, yeah, I don't want to, like, use a bad word, but it's basically just doing what you need to do, not to throw it in people's faces and stuff, but, you know, I see Altavilla do it sometimes in the big leagues. Like, I see Diaz do it. I always see Pagan do it. You know, when they get a big out or a big strikeout or something, mm-hmm. they'll yell. They'll just get hyped up. Basically, it's just something that, you know, keeps them a step ahead mentally, I guess. You know, just playing like a – there's another bad word I want to use. it's just playing with emotion and disregarding what other people think of you, I guess. Not being disrespectful, but just – doing what needs to be done in order to get you fired up and stay in mentally. And, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's hitting a big double and throwing your hands up in the air, or, you know, I think I walked off a game this year and threw my hands up in the air. And I don't know. It's just, you know, playing with a chip on your shoulder and playing with attitude. And yeah, just playing with attitude, basically, not really caring what other people think, trying to get your teammates fired up.
You gotta let it out, you know?
Oh,
absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely, and it's like if you yell and say the wrong thing on the field, you know, you could be thrown out, even if you're, you know, if you don't have bad intentions. But it's just playing with attitude and and the way you play the game, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is something that is, you know, we're at a difficult place with that in baseball. A little, we have on one side all the people who say, play the game the right way.
Yeah.
And really, I think try to I don't know what they want you to do after you smash a monster home run, like to calmly trot around the bases and let no emotion show on your face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have that extreme to the other end, which, you know, kind of leads to things like this ridiculous brawl that happened the other day.
Yes, I was watching it. I was watching it live right here, actually.
Seriously, what I heard that in the Mariners clubhouse, everyone rushed off the field from batting practice so they could run inside and watch it.
Really?
Was it a similar scene there in Arkansas?
No,
or?
So, it was actually our off day. So me and Seeger and I were just sitting here watching it, and it was kind of just unbelievable. Actually, I've only ever seen these brawls like on ESPN or recaps and stuff, and I was just watching it live. I think Seeger was in his bed, and I yelled, "Hey man, you got to come over here and watch it." And you know, we watched it probably 10 to 15 times over and over again. It was incredible.
What would your role be if you were in the midst of two brawling teams? Would you be like the teammate holder backer? Would you be Buster Posey, like just kind of standing
no.
up to the side, like this is not worth this?
So I think it was Michael Morse that ran in there and bumped heads and collided face to face with another teammate. That would probably be me.
Yeah, with Jeff Samardzija.
Yeah, that would be me. I would probably be bumping heads with a teammate by accident. Probably get my teeth knocked out or something. Yeah, that would be me for sure.
Well, I think Morris got a concussion. Yeah. He's on the DL.
It's so
yeah,
messed up.
He had to have gotten hurt from that.
Yeah. Okay. Don't do that then for okay. our sake and for the traveler's sake. Don't
okay.
don't go rushing onto the field in any
okay.
brawls. I mean, speaking of playing like villains and maybe being a team that everyone hated to face, last year, the Jackson Generals, it was so fun to follow that team. I cannot imagine that any other teams really enjoyed playing you.
No.
I'm thinking back to something. This was fantastic. I was like weeding the yard, and I just stood there in amazement while this was happening. I think Gaviglio was pitching this game, but the opposing manager, I forget who you were playing, he went nuts. He did not like a call, and he threw everything out of the dugout onto the field. He threw like a bag of baseballs onto the field. He threw equipment onto the, like, everything. You don't remember this? Is this a common feature then?
You know, I have a terrible memory, but I do remember a bunch of teams, a bunch of managers getting kind of fired up, and, you know, a lot of it happening when we're in town. And I couldn't really put into words or imagine what it would be like to face our 2016 Jackson General team. It would definitely wouldn't be good for the stats playing against us, you know. So it's I could see how a lot of frustration was going on at the time.
Yeah, you guys were terrifying. You were just juggernauts of that league. What made that team so special? Why was that team so good? Because obviously you had amazing pitching performances. You had Andrew Moore, who's now in Tacoma doing great. You had Tyler O'Neill just tearing up the league.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were a lot of guys who maybe weren't as heralded, like not huge names.
Yeah,
And yet the team just got it done.
Yeah. You know, we had Benji Gonzalez at short, who, you know, I guess he was a free agent. He signed with us. He was a huge part of the success that we had that year. I think he ended up hitting like 280, 290 and just, you know, kind of went unnoticed. You know, actually, in my eyes, that's what I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tim Lopes had a quietly amazing year, hitting 290 as well in his first year in AA. And, you know, we had Leon Landry, who didn't have the average that he wanted, but he made unbelievable plays in the outfield. That's another dude that I think kind of went unnoticed. And, you know, I don't know how many triples he had, but it was unbelievable.
Yeah, he was fast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I learned a lot from Leon, too.
I mean, speaking of speed, and like, we can't talk about, I think, what the Generals did without acknowledging what I have termed the Ian Miller double, which is a single. And honestly, they should just put you on second. They should just like save the catcher the embarrassment of having, or save the pitcher the stat of getting a base stolen again and just put you on second and make it a double.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're going to take that base. You are going to steal that base, and they are not going to be able to stop you.
Yeah, I was last year, you know, second base was my go-to. Loved it. Didn't really steal third that much. I actually didn't really have the confidence in stealing third base just because I've never really done it much, even though, you know, Darren Brown, who was our base running coordinator for a little while, who was my head coach last year and this year, you know, he worked with me a bunch. Todd Donovan worked with me a bunch. But it really wasn't until I got to, you know, the spring training games here on the big league side that I actually learned from Terod Dyson how to steal third base. And then in the games, I think this year, you know, I showed that I could steal second and third a little bit. And I might have stole third base more than second base. But, you know, I'm kind of putting it all together this year. And I like stealing third better.
Well, stealing third is the accomplishment, right? Because stealing second, depending on what hand the pitcher throws with or what the...
Mm-hmm.
What their release is, what pitch you're stealing on, right? I mean, that's pretty common. But stealing third is an accomplishment.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, stealing seconds. Either it's because you're faster, you got a good jump, or it was a good count to run in with off speed coming. You know, I think a lot of people can steal second base. I don't think it's that crazy, but you know, stealing third, you have to be a good base stealer, I feel like, and there's a lot of guys that aren't very fast that steal third, not saying he's not very fast, but another guy that I kind of picked the brain of stealing third was Mitch Haniger. Mm. He was in Arizona for the offseason as well, towards the back end, so I spent a lot of time with him, and he's actually, you know, him and Gerard are wizards at stealing third base.
I don't think, because we haven't gotten to see a ton of Haniger because he's been hurt. So I wouldn't have known that. It's really interesting.
Yeah, he's a good base runner. He's a good base stealer, and he's got a lot of points. I vividly remember him taking me to the you know, the video room and showing me some things to look at, and you know, he's got a great approach when stealing third base.
We've all kind of heard the coaches just rave about Haniger's baseball IQ and what a student of the game he is. And so it sounds like your experience is really backing that up.
Yeah, he's, especially with this swing, it's actually incredible. It's, never seen somebody have so many theories and have so much stuff go into a baseball swing. You know, even before, stepping into the box, just what he's looking for, his approach, the situation, what he thinks is going to be thrown. It's unbelievable.
Well, let's talk a little bit about swings, because I know that you did a lot of work this off season, your swing. So the retooled swing is one of the famous spring training baseball cliches, right? Like, you have best shape of his life, done a lot of mental work, and then the retooled swing. But it really seems like Mitch Haniger has had this retooled swing that has led to great success for him. And you have a new swing, and you're, just to look at your hitting profile, we have two travelers who are batting in the top five in the Texas League right now. Number one overall is Chuck Taylor, who's just having an insane season, who I think most of us were like, who is Chuck Taylor?
Yeah, he's it's special what he's doing, and he does it literally every day, and he's got the same approach every day. He works hard every day before the games, and he brings it onto the field, and it's fun to watch.
Well, he is something special, but also in the top five, and not someplace I think you would have found yourself last year, is you, slashing .339, .390, .454. So that's an average that's almost 100 points higher than where you were last year. An OBP 60 points higher, and a slugging percentage 150 points higher than what you were doing last year.
Yes.
Two home runs already versus none last year. While, you know, the Ks have jumped as they will when you're slugging so much more. But your walk rate has remained pretty steady. So... Tell me about this new approach to hitting you have, and pretty exciting, but also maybe a little scary to suddenly be striking out a bunch where that's never been part of your game before.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, last year I really wanted to focus on controlling the zone. You know, I wanted to show that I could walk as much as I could strike out. I think I did a good job of doing that. What I also wanted to do was, you know, I wanted to have a great success rate stealing bases. I didn't necessarily want to get to 50. I did 50 in 2015. 2016, I said, you know what, I just, you know, I want to do what I can to help win, and I want to get caught stealing the least amount of times as possible. That ended up working out. This year, what I wanted to do is I wanted to put the focus solely on hitting, not necessarily throwing out, walking as much as striking out, but I wanted to put an emphasis on trying to hit as close to or above 300 as possible. And as you said, you know, with the extra base hits come strikeouts. I had a little hole in my swing, especially with two strikes earlier in the season, and I made an adjustment with Roy Howard, hitting coach out here, and it kind of started limiting the strikeouts a little bit, and my walk started going up a little bit, and didn't really sacrifice power. It's just kind of something in my load, and you know, as I being in Arizona this whole offseason, I was able to be with Brant Brown, our hitting guy, and he worked with me every day. He also worked with DJ Peterson. You know, Haniger was there, Tuffy was there, and it's just basically learning from everybody, having a consistent approach that I bring to the ballpark every day, and just willing to die with it. I'm willing to go up to the plate, and I'm willing to fail with it. I'm willing to look like an idiot if something doesn't go right, as long as I'm sticking to my approach, my plan. You know, the biggest thing is, you know, going 0-4, 0-5, going home, kind of just shrugging it off, and going back to the field tomorrow with the same approach, you know, willing to fail with it again, and just sticking to the process, sticking to, you know, what I'm trying to do. And, you know, if it works 4 out of 5 times that day, then good. And if it doesn't, I'm still going to try it again tomorrow.
And I think that that's something that just maybe organizationally we haven't seen as far as a consistent approach. You look at somebody who's had some struggles, like Mike Zunino with his swing. He would go and fail and then retool, try to do something else, get some different coaching that maybe put him in a different direction. And the results weren't great. And so now he's just starting to maybe adhere more to that kind of an approach where he's going out and, okay, maybe it's not going to work, but he's going to stay true to that approach. So is that an organizational change that you feel that's coming from? Or what are the differences in being a Seattle Mariner 2016, 2017 versus 2015 and all the years before?
Yeah, you know, with this new regime, it's all about controlling the zone, doing damage with the pitches that are in your box. You're looking, if you're in a hitter's count, you're looking for one spot. You know, to be honest with you, I don't really remember much from the pre-DePoto regime, just because, you know, I think I was going through the motions a little bit. We didn't really put a huge emphasis on, you know, controlling the zone and putting all the work into the offensive aspect of things. And, you know, now it's just everybody's kind of on the same page. Everybody's singing the same song from rookie ball all the way up. The same vocab is used when referencing, you know, your offensive plan. Everybody's preaching the same thing, and, you know, everyone's willing to help in the same way that everyone is in the organization, you know?
Well, that sounds great. How about the coaching change? Because I know that a lot of people went out, some people stuck around, but maybe not as many. A lot of people came in. And that's always, even if it's a change for the best, it's always tough when coaches aren't exactly management. But, you know, your higher-ups change and they're asking different things out of you and maybe asking for a big shift in approach. So what was that transition like?
I think it was pretty smooth. What these guys do now, that's really awesome. and really awesome to everybody else here in the organization in terms of players is everybody communicates a lot more than they used to. You know, we have better relationships with the people up top. You know, Kingston, DePoto, McNamara, all those guys. It's, you know, they've all been here already. They all sit down and talk to us. They all have the same plan that they want us to do, that, you know, Andy McKay wants us to do, Mike Micucci wants us to do. Everybody is very outgoing with the plan from top to bottom. It's just, you know, there's a lot more communication. A lot more eyes are open because we know what they expect. We know what they want. And, you know, in terms of last year with the Jackson Generals, you know, everybody was on the same page. And, you know, now, I guess with the 2017 Arkansas Travelers, we're starting to put it all together, same page.
I want to flip back for a second to what you did over the off season, and just as far as, like, having that build into spring training. Because for all the things about the WBC that people say, like, oh, it hurts pitchers, whatever, it was a pretty big opportunity for you and some of the other guys who maybe haven't gotten so much, let's call it, marquee time. All of a sudden, there's Ian Miller on my TV. It was very exciting.
Yeah.
I got to see you steal bases in person, which was
definitely
really fun.
Definitely.
So what was that experience like, just being around all of those guys? I know you touched on it a little bit with learning from Dyson and Haniger, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was... you know, it's... They do a good job of bringing people over that aren't in big league camp, you know, on a consistent basis. I was told, you know, before spring training started that I would have a lot of opportunity over there, even though I wasn't in big league spring training. You know, I'd go over there a lot and, you know, have an opportunity to play and learn from those guys. And, you know, being over there and being able to pick their brains, I think I probably talked to everyone at least once. And I got to take bits and pieces from everybody, kind of molded into one big thing, one big winning attitude, and, you know, hear things that, you know, I've never heard before, kind of put my own little, I guess, ideas in there. And, you know, just the way that they approach the game and look at the game, and it's basically the same thing that I do in Double A, or like to think that I do. It's just, they're just so much more refined. It's, you know, it's awesome. It's, I learned so much being around those guys again this year, and hopefully I can keep doing it.
This is jumping forward to a Twitter question that we got from Mary Langston, but was there anybody who was just sort of intimidating to you? Like, you walk into that big league clubhouse and you're like, oh my God, that's so-and-so.
Chooch, for sure.
Oh, really?
Yes. Because he doesn't talk much. And he's got, like, a stone-cold just stare on his face. And, like, I remember he'll hit like a double. He'll hit like a double or, you know, an RBI and come back or throw somebody out trying to steal. And just no emotion, just stone cold, just sits there. And I'll look at him. I'll just stare at him, you know, because I'm from Philadelphia, so I've always been a huge fan of him, you know.
Oh.
And so I just sit there and I'll just stare at him like, oh my gosh, that's Chooch. You know, I'm sitting next to him. And he's still got that's awesome. Stare. And he'll just look at me. He'll just look at me, and I'll, like, give him an awkward smile, just nothing. But I did get to talk to him a little bit, and he's an awesome dude. I was, you know, asking him about Chase Utley, Shane Victorino, those guys that he played with, you know, in Philly. And he's a really good dude. He's intimidating just because he doesn't say much, and you don't know what he's thinking, especially if he's looking at you. And, yeah, I'd have to say him for sure.
He's definitely...
That makes sense. Oh.
Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, yeah, that definitely makes sense because he seems like the most, like, no-nonsense, like, angry dad on the team.
Yeah.
I was going to say, he strikes me as, like, the cop who's one day from retirement.
Yes, you know? Exactly. He's too old for this shit.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Just trying not to get hurt.
Yeah.
Exactly. One day left to retirement.
Yeah.
I know that you... kind of sacrificed a lot to be off this whole off season. You were in Arizona working on stuff. So let's talk a little bit about, like, just kind of, you had no respite from the grind, basically, right? Like, you guys, you won the championship. It was great. It was fun. Went home for, you were home for like a month, 2 months, something like that.
Yeah. I think I was home for Thanksgiving and Christmas, maybe for a week or two, both times, and then just came straight back. It, you know, that's kind of what I want it to be like. You know, this is my third off-season in a row staying in Arizona. So, you know, I like it. To be honest with you, I'll probably stay there for the rest of my career. Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's, you know, Monday through Friday, working out, hitting, all that stuff. We had, you know, our mental skills guys in there. So I was working with, you know, Franco, Van Ostrand, and it's basically just baseball 24/7, and that's kind of how I like it.
Nice.
So what does a typical off-season day look like for you, and then what does a typical in-season day look like for you?
All right, so typical off-season day, usually wake up at 8. Working out starts at 9, so I wake up at 8, go get Chick-fil-A breakfast, get to the field.
What is it with ballplayers and Chick-fil-A breakfast? Because Kyle Lewis said the same thing. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's just delicious. I love it. They're so friendly.
Hey, can I tell a quick Chick-fil-A story?
Yes, please.
Because it pertains to the Travelers, because I found myself in Little Rock 2 years ago, 3 years ago, for a funeral, and was there, had a couple extra days, and so our family decided to go to a Travelers game, and this was back when they were the Angels affiliate.
Okay.
So everybody's wearing Trumbo and Trout shirts and stuff. And they, do they still sell Chick-fil-A at the stadium? Because everybody freaked out about that.
No, I don't think so. I haven't seen Chick-fil-A at the stadium.
Huh. Well, they definitely did when I was there, and it's kind of a novelty because it's not as common in Washington. There's a couple locations that people go crazy for, but yeah, I was just like, oh, Chick-fil-A, sweet.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it. I don't think I've seen it at the stadium. I know.
I feel like Ian would know if there was Chick-fil-A being. Yeah. Because Chick-fil-A has a smell, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You smell it. You smell it. Sure.
They would surely hook you up if they were there.
Oh, for sure.
All right, so we have Chick-fil-A breakfast. Go to the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then I get there, working out starts at about 9. You know, work out for an hour or two, get loose. They go hit. Start in the cage, hit off the tee, get ready, go out to the field. We'd have somebody throwing BP to us. Chris Prieto was there a bunch, so he was throwing. Brant Brown was throwing. Take BP on the field, throw. Get some outfield work in. Sean O'Malley was there too. You know, basically it's just spring training pretty much. Just laid back and, you know, basically staying in baseball mode the whole offseason. And then go home. You know, then go home, play a bunch of video games, lay around. And then usually, you know, maybe some Chick-fil-A for dinner as well.
Or sushi, right?
Yeah. So I was in the La Quinta, which was right next to the field, and it was a rotation. So it was either Chick-fil-A, sushi, or it was Cheesecake Factory.
Nice. I think I've seen all of those on your Snapchat multiple times.
Consistently.
With your stick figure girlfriend.
Yes. It was a lonely off season. So you know, I watched Castaway. And you know how he's got that ball with the hand on it and he talks to it?
Right.
You know, that's kind of what I was going through.
I see.
Yeah.
Who was your Wilson?
You know, her name changed a bunch. I'm not sure. You know, just kind of depending on, you know, what I was feeling, her name would change and her colors would change. You know, she was green sometimes, yellow, whatever.
I enjoyed the one of you at the movie theater with all your stick figure friends around you.
Yeah.
Out with the crew, I think.
Out with the crew, with my boys. You know, there's no one out there. You know, and if there was people out there, like, you know, they had families. And so I was riding solo, but, you know, that's how I like it, so.
Well, I was going to ask, what is the hardest thing about the minor league life, and what is the part that you like the best? Because it is a grind.
The hardest part is definitely the money. I'm sure you hear it talked about a lot. It's brutal. It's terrible. Just trying to stay afloat, you know. I'll even ask my mom for money for rent, help with rent, just because, you know, it's tough. It is tough. The best part of minor league baseball. Oh, there's so many. basically, just being able to live out your dream, play baseball. You know, I make jokes about, you know, how hard it is, and again, you know, not getting paid much, but I am getting paid to play professional baseball. I'm living out my dream. You know, even though it's not in the big leagues right now, I'm still loving life. I'm still playing professional baseball, and I wouldn't change it.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Inspiring. all right. Well, I think what we'll do now is we'll take a little break. We'll let Eric tend to his fussy baby.
Okay.
And when we come back, we will take some listener questions.
Cool.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. This is Ground Control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade. And the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to Ground. And we're back. Okay, now is the time on the Lookout Landing podcast where we answer your questions. And I think, Eric, you have those today?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
All right, so let's see. Let's start with this one from Cecilia Blankenship.
Big Travs fan, Cecilia.
Okay.
Big nice. Ian Miller fan as well.
Okay.
She asks, what are your favorite and least favorite things about being in Arkansas?
My favorite thing is definitely how nice all the people are. My mom came out to visit, you know, towards the end of April, and you know, she just felt kind of at home. Like, everybody was so nice. I think there were fans in the stadium asking her to sit with them. Like, oh, you don't have to sit alone. Like, sit with us, you know. Season ticket holders willing to like give up a front row seat just so she could sit there and stuff. It's definitely awesome. And the worst thing about being in Arkansas, to be honest with you, I have not found anything bad with it. There's actually really, everybody's super nice. Everything's awesome.
Humidity's not too bad, or
no, it hasn't been yet. It's been getting hot. Actually, got it. The bugs suck.
Oh, yeah.
The bugs are terrible. The bugs are terrible.
More so than in Jackson, Tennessee.
Yes. These bugs are relentless. And we have like a concoction now that our trainer came up with, or somebody came up with. It's like we use mouthwash and vanilla extract. And we literally put it in a spray bottle and spray our whole bodies.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys smell great.
Desperate. Yeah. It smells weird, but it works.
Nice. I can't believe that there's not a product that works better than mouthwash and vanilla extract.
Yeah, we've used them all, too.
I don't doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's that. So, a corollary to that, then, I would have to ask is, I know that you've been sort of all over with your baseball career. What has been your favorite, and excluding Philadelphia, home city, what has been your favorite place to live or spend time in?
You can pick a road city. You know, I really like, I like Tulsa. We've played Tulsa like two or three times, I think, at their place. I just like it because, you know, it's a city, it's downtown. You can literally walk out of your hotel, which is super nice. And you're in the city, you can walk mm-hmm. around. But what also helps is that there's a Starbucks literally within throwing distance. And I can wake up and I can get out of my hotel, go get Starbucks, and then literally come right back into my hotel because there's a place to eat downstairs. And I don't have to, you know, get outside of my comfort zone, you know.
So your favorite place is the place that requires you to see as little of it as possible. In
yeah.
<I'm laughs> the most amenities.
I'm a hermit crab. So, like, this whole off season, you know, I got all of my food to go. I just eat it back at my apartment or hotel or whatever it is. That's just what I'm comfortable doing. And I really do like playing here in Arkansas. I really enjoyed playing in Bakersfield as well, as crazy as that sounds.
You enjoy getting your eyes singed off?
I don't know. It's just not a whole lot to it, you know. Arkansas is pretty laid back.
Have you explored much of Little Rock? Like, there's the Clinton family library right downtown, I remember from when I was there.
Yeah, I don't, no. I don't do much reading. I don't really, I've been
some
to
nice
a,
restaurants too.
Yes, there is. I've been to a nice place called Cajun's Wharf. It's literally right next to my apartment.
Oh yeah.
And it's a seafood spot. It's the best seafood I've ever had in my life. And it is awesome. Right on the water. Took my high school coach there, took my girlfriend there when she came out, and it was, you know, it was great. It was awesome.
Southerners know how to eat. That is for dang sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the food's unbelievable.
Yeah, what about this place? Andrew Moore talked about this, the something pork belly cafe, pot belly cafe, what is it called?
Whole Hog?
Whole hog cafe. That's it.
Well, that's what Paxton had catered.
Oh.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Awesome. It's awesome, just barbecue, and it's, I love it so much.
Sounds legit.
You're doing a pretty solid commercial for Little Rock right now.
Yeah, well, I'm trying.
I mean, maybe that's a good side hustle for you.
It's a cool little town. I guess I was impressed by it when I was there. Nice downtown. Cool bridges that go over the river that kind of splits the city in two.
Yes, and they light up with cool colors and stuff.
And it's a crazy, awesome beautiful right ballpark, isn't it? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the nicest I've ever played in. It reminds me of Birmingham, which is in the Southern League. It's the White Sox AA. It's really nice.
Hmm.
Nice. Shall we ask another question?
Yes.
All right. Okay.
I think we can skip Mary's question, though, because okay. we kind of asked that.
That's true. Should we go to Ian's?
Yeah.
All right. So Ian Cunningham asks, do you have any players' jerseys? Growing up or now?
No. To be honest with you, I have never really watched baseball that much until I started playing pro ball. So growing up, I think I had a college basketball jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, I ordered it. I think my mom ordered it, and I got the wrong one, but I still wore it anyway because it was like a college basketball jersey. I've never really had jerseys. I had a Donovan McNabb jersey. That's seriously about it.
From the Eagles?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, I can't imagine. So when you say you didn't watch baseball growing up, but you just played it, so you just, it just didn't really do it for you to watch it?
No. And I think I really started watching baseball. I think it was my junior year of college. Just, you know, when all the draft stuff started, and I just mm-hmm. really took a liking to it. Really took interest in it, and you know, I find myself watching the Mariners games on my iPad in the clubhouse back here in my hotel. Just that's just what I do to pass the time, because I just you know, it's fun watching it for me just because I understand more the game within the game, what's going on, maybe, you know, kind of what they're thinking a little bit, and that's
some
cool.
Of the guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, gotta well, see what they're up to.
Actually, maybe let's double back on Mary's question then, because she asked who your favorite current Mariner is, and I think we know the answer to that. But maybe we can just talk about, like, whose game do you really admire or admire from afar? Who do you watch to be like, oh, I want to steal things from this?
A player from the Mariners, it would have to be Jarrad Dyson, for sure. I probably annoyed the crap out of him in spring training with all the questions I had. And it would be like I'd try to pick his brain after he just got out or something, and he's back in the dugout, he might be a little mad or something, just because... You know, when the starters are done, they leave after, like, the fourth or fifth inning, right? And that's when us guys go in. And so, you know, I would just try to talk to him, just try to see what he's thinking. The one thing that has really helped me this year with hitting that he does is I noticed one time, I think it was an 0-0 count. Maybe it was even the first pitch of the game. He's choked up. He was just choked up, like a two-strike approach. And... you know, he ended up coming back in. I'm like, Dyson, what is that? What are you doing? And I mean, he explained it to me. It made sense. And so this year, every single pitch, I choke up on my bat. And I've never hit so many extra base hits or so many balls hard, and probably continue doing it for the rest of my career. Just, you know, the little things. It's little things can go a long way.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Should we ask John's question here?
I think we covered the biggest differences in the organization as far as, like, unless you have anything to add, Ian, to,
No, it's just communication. It's just a lot easier to go out and play, and, you know, we're all having the same mindset just because they're communicating with us what they want us to do and plan our approach, and, you know, we're just sticking to it.
That's something that's been pretty consistent from everybody that I've talked to in the organization, all the players that I've talked to, at least, is they've all hit on that same word, communication. So
yes, for sure. It's a lot easier when you know what's going on, when you're in the loop, you know?
You have good communication. So the communication about communication is...
Definitely.
I don't know what I'm trying to say. Ask the next question, Eric.
Okay. So Montana Seagal asks, will you grow your hair long?
Because we got the Flow Bros this year with Gamble and Motter and Overton in AAA has the... it just seems to be a thing across baseball right now. A lot of guys have the wild mane.
Yeah.
Be like hockey players, man.
You know, I don't know if my girlfriend and/or my mom would approve, just because... I don't look very good with my hair long. See, those guys are special guys. They can pull it off. I kind of just look like an idiot. I did, however, have my hair pretty long going into 2014. I think it was like down to my shoulders. I don't know. Maybe I'm unpredictable. I kind of just like to go with the flow. Oh, that's there you go. A little flow right there. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe.
I mean, nice. I know ball players are superstitious, so the clip you're going at right now, I would not change anything.
Yeah, well, I just did. I just did. I just cut all my hair off, and I shaved my face. Oh. So I don't know. Yeah, well, so we'll see. and I just got hurt, so yeah, you never know.
Oh, man.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's see. I have a couple questions that I jotted down. What are your favorite walk-up songs that you've used or that others have used that you've heard at any other level? Anyone stick out to you?
Has anyone stuck out to me? Yeah. Yeah. So last year, Pat Brady had a bunch of walk-out songs that were just off the wall. I think he had one.
Pat Brady is hilarious.
Yeah,
I miss that guy.
He's hilarious. I still keep in touch with him. Yeah, I don't know what the song was, but it was like a song from the 50s or 60s. It was like, I don't even know what it was. It reminded me of something like Elvis, but it was it just fit him. Yeah, it fit his personality to a T.
Nice. Where is Pat now?
I think he's playing indie ball. And you know, from all the pictures he sends me, it's really nice. The places he goes and plays at, really nice. Stadium's unbelievable. Hotel's nice. So, it looks like he's, you know, he's having fun.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What are some movies that get quoted the most often in the clubhouse or dugout or when you guys are hanging out?
What's Step Brothers.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You got that answer ready to go.
Very cool. Yeah. I probably won't say the stuff that's said, but it's there. You know, Step Brothers is a big one for sure.
I will ask this next one because I think Eric has a fussy baby to tend to. What is the best minor league meal dollar for dollar?
Best minor league meal dollar for dollar.
Because I know food is really important to you guys. And I was at the media day for the Rainiers when a lot of guys who had just been promoted up to AAA were... they kind of had like a meet the press thing, and there was mm-hmm. a big buffet, and there was some nice food on it. And oh man, those dudes can eat.
So, oh, I'm sure.
Steve Barron had like 3 plates going at yep, one time. Yeah,
that's Barron. Yeah, for sure. So I think best dollar for dollar, I'd say, away from the field is Jimmy John's. Plus because they deliver. And you can give them, like, specific instructions, and they'll literally deliver it, like, wherever you need, whenever you need. And anywhere. Plus, it's cheap. Other than that, I think probably peanut butter and jelly is probably your best bang for your buck. And there's never a shortage of those around here.
I bet.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's sort of the minor league cliche, right? Peanut butter sandwiches.
Yeah. Well, I'm allergic to peanut butter, so I've never had one, but they're all around here.
You know, every time you steal a base, Jimmy John's sponsors it. So there's like a little plug on the radio broadcast for Jimmy John's. Freaky fast, freaky fresh.
Yeah. I heard that.
Yeah, so there's got to be a way we can get you paid from Jimmy John's, right? Like,
yeah, I wouldn't fight that. I wouldn't fight it. I'd be cool with it. Every dollar helps, you know? For sure.
Jimmy John's.
All right,
it's
well.
It's great.
Maybe we can start petitioning Jimmy John's to make you the face of the franchise.
Yeah, that's cool with me. I'm flexible.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ian, for taking time out of your day. I know you have a bus to catch.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta go get your bag on the bus, cause minor league life.
Definitely.
Minor league probs.
So attractive, for sure.
Is it any better in the Texas League than it was? Cause I know in the Southern League you guys were traveling you had some rough trips all the way down, like way down into Florida.
Yeah.
Is the Texas League any better for that?
Yes, as far as hands down. Goes? Yes, definitely. We'll take 2 buses. That's the good. Buses are nicer. Everybody takes care of you more here. Personally, I think it's just, you know, it's easier just to focus on performing. I like it a lot better.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ian, for making the time, and, we wish you the best of luck in the remaining season, and we hope that you are healthy and ready to go back out there soon.
Yes, and, feel better soon.
We get a chance to see you in Tacoma soon.
I hope so too. Thank you guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Adios. Dog got the mighty let me tell the news. My head got wet in midnight dew. Red got up and down on my bend and knees. Talking to a man from Galilee. My God spoke and he sounds so sweet. I thought I heard the shuffle of angels' feet. He put one hand upon my head. Red got the mighty let me tell you what he said.